Or do I choose the self-medicating option? That's always the easy option, isn't it? Just to distract, find something else to fill the hole. But that always needs topping up. It's only God who can do something with the pain. And often we've got to go to God in the pain and with the pain, knowing he's sovereign over all, even in our tragedy, which means that only he can answer our cries of pain and bitterness. This is a tragic story. The conflict in this narrative runs really deep. But even though Ruth and Naomi have left Moab and entered Bethlehem to where there's no longer famine, they still have problems. They've got a new problem, in fact. Grain harvesting is beginning. But how do they get access to the grain? You know, Naomi have no cash and no crop. So Ruth steps up to be Naomi's provider and go out into the fields. She happens upon this wealthy landowner's field during the harvest, and he shows Ruth some good old-fashioned hospitality. Keep in mind, Ruth's a Moabite. Boaz doesn't have to help her, you would think. After all, those Moabites, they're dirty, rotten cheats. But God's baked in protection for the poor in the law. You know, the law that was given to Israel from God through Moses. Leviticus 23:22, for example. The poor could pick up the leftover grain after the harvesters. Cool. Well, maybe that only applies to Israelites. That same passage also states that foreigners could pick the leftover grain. And if Boaz is honourable, he'll keep that law. And he does. He lets Naomi take the grain. He lets Ruth take the grain. God has gone before Ruth and Naomi by at least 300 years, right? The law came in 300 years before Ruth and Naomi's story. Ruth and Naomi have no cash and crop of their own, but now they have food. They return to Bethlehem empty, but God still provides for them. He's gone ahead of them. And Boaz, to add another little twist, isn't just another wealthy landowner. Chapter 2, verse 3, as it turned out. It's a great phrase. Ruth was picking grain in a family member's field. Boaz, as it turns out, was Naomi's relative. And this series of events is looking a lot less like chance at this point and more like the sovereign provision of God. The sovereign loving kindness of God, in fact. God's special covenant love for his people. God pulling the strings behind the scenes for their good in his kindness. God's setting things up so that Ruth and Naomi can have crop without cash. And hey, if you get free food, you're winning, right? Have a look at chapter 2, verse 11 and 12. Boaz replied to Ruth, "I've been told all about you, what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Boaz sees God's kindness in going with her mother-in-law to Bethlehem, to a land and people she did not know. But he also sees God's greater sovereign loving kindness at play in spreading his wings of refuge over Ruth, the foreigner. Ruth, though a foreigner, isn't cast aside by God's law and God's provision. Now, as we saw before, the law compelled landowners to leave the leftovers of their crop to the poor. But more than that, God has given Ruth and Naomi refuge from the ruin they've experienced. Elimelech and Naomi left God's land and blessing for fortune and food in Moab. But even though they did that, God's still been kind to Ruth and Naomi. But God's sovereign loving kindness does not stop there. Scan over chapter 2, verse 20. Ruth gets home to Naomi and explains everything. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He's not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." So things are actually tracking up. Now they have grain and a guardian, someone who's going to help them. That's a huge change. They've gone from not being able to support themselves to having food on the table and a friend they can call on. All because God's working to give them refuge. God's given them refuge in his kindness. See the reference to kindness in the middle of chapter 2, verse 20. Yeah, the sense of that is loving kindness, lasting kindness, covenant love, God's special love for his people. Love that never actually left Ruth and Naomi. Sovereign loving kindness that was in their corner, that is in their corner. Ruin is giving way to God's sovereign loving kindness. But there's still a sense that Ruth and Naomi are vulnerable. They've got no dearest or descendants, no family or future. They're still vulnerable without someone who's going to provide for them. And their family will die out without descendants. Is that their fate? Are they just left to kind of make it through life, stumble through? Is the promise for their family going to end with them? Despite all those questions, Ruth has refuge in Yahweh, the sovereign God who showers kindness on those he chooses. It's indicative for us, to go to God for refuge. Because God goes before us in trial and trouble and gives us refuge in his sovereign loving kindness. Well, good news now for Ruth and Naomi. Life is actually looking up. But then Naomi effectively tells Ruth to risk it all. And this becomes the kind of climax of the story. You kind of think, like you've got grain, you've got a friend who's going to help you when you're in need. You could just leave it there and everything would be okay. But then Naomi turns around and says to Ruth, just roll the dice, risk it all, see what happens. So what's all that about? Naomi gives Ruth some weird instructions in chapter 3. You know, go to Boaz while he sleeps, uncover his toes, then go to sleep half a meter away. Poor guy's going to get cold feet at night. I have so many questions. What's Naomi doing telling Ruth to lie by Boaz at night? What's Ruth doing lying by Boaz at night? Maybe this is some bad version of Farmer Wants a Wife. Here's what's happening. Naomi is asking Ruth to be vulnerable and effectively ask for marriage. It's kind of the ancient world equivalent, I guess, of dropping a handkerchief or something like that. Not quite Jane Austen, but if you squint, I guess it's close enough. You know, I guess that makes Ruth Keira Knightley and Boaz, the guy from Spooks. I don't know the actors. Boaz eventually wakes up in the middle of the night and his feet are strangely cold. Yeah, he's the tuck the corners under the mattress kind of guy. He looks around and sees Ruth at his feet. And now Boaz is also an honorable guy. He doesn't take advantage of a vulnerability, but he gets Ruth's message. Be my guardian redeemer. Make good on the promise. The kinsman redeemer who brings his family out of poverty. That's the job title of a guardian redeemer. You bring the family members out of poverty by making them your family. In Israel, the guardian redeemer would buy the land and marry the widow of the deceased relative to continue the family line.
And so Boaz effectively sort of signs the pre-contract, I guess, by spreading his garment over Ruth as a sign and seal of his protection. I suppose she's getting pretty cold out there in the field too. Before anyone else got up, Boaz dropped Ruth off at Naomi's and went to the market square to meet the elders. Boaz could have rushed straight in and married Ruth to redeem Naomi's family land for himself. Because, hey, if you're a farmer, the more land you've got, the more money you can make. That would have always been my attitude. But he keeps the letter of the law. He doesn't only honour Ruth, he also honours God. There's a closer relative who's happy to redeem the land. Someone who's always out to expand his operations. Until he finds out that he has to marry Ruth. Thanks, but no thanks, is his reply. But Boaz is willing to step in to redeem his family and marry the outsider. Now Ruth and Naomi will be set for life. Boaz's willingness to marry Ruth is a huge display of loving kindness. Loving kindness that, in fact, reflects the God who has been in Naomi and Ruth's corner from the beginning. It's also the loving kindness of God who put this whole guardian redeemer scheme in place and worked things behind the scenes to connect Ruth and Boaz. Have a look at chapter 4, verses 9 to 11. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the deed with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are witnesses." Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel." Redemption, resolution. Naomi's prayer that Ruth would find rest in the home of another husband in chapter 1 is answered, but in a way that she never expected. And notice how straightforward Boaz is about acquiring Ruth the Moabite. And he's straightforward about that in a public setting with a bunch of local Israelite elders. He embraces her. He's all in. Which becomes especially important when you consider the fact that the Edomites... I'm jumping the gun. That's next week. Boaz is all in, though. Just as God has already embraced her as his own. Now, before, Ruth had no dearest or descendants. But God has provided the solution for Ruth and Naomi. Redemption and rebirth. Redemption on the one hand. Boaz as guardian redeemer has bought the family land and Ruth. He's provided Ruth with a home. And to do so, he's put his own money and reputation on the line. He's brought them out of uncertainty and really not much of a future into his home and given them, and together they'll make a future. And two, rebirth. Ruth has a son. The family line that had seemingly died out when Chilion and Mahlon died is reborn, so to speak, through the birth of Obed. God's brought life from the dead. Ruth and Naomi now have dearest and descendants. And through Obed, whose son is Jesse and whose son is David, Ruth will be like Rachel and Leah. She'll become the ancestor of a famous race. So famous that their race will produce the greatest Israelite king of all time, David. When Ruth and Naomi look at baby Obed, they can realize just how precious God's sovereign loving kindness for them is. Ruth and Naomi came to Bethlehem as widows with nothing, but God's made them full giving them refuge and redemption in his sovereign loving kindness. Death, barrenness, emptiness, curse, bitterness, and exile gives way to life, fruitfulness, fullness, and blessing. And if we think about our own stories, death, darkness, and sin has given way in Jesus to life, light, and righteousness. The story of Ruth isn't just about God's sovereign loving kindness for two widows. It's also inevitably a story of loving kindness for all people. God hadn't only been planning for the refuge and redemption of two widows. God was laying the groundwork for the Christmas story in the pages of Ruth and Naomi's story. And that's why ultimately this story is so pregnant with promise. Ruth and Naomi's story doesn't just lead to the birth of Obed, whose grandson is David, the greatest king in Israelite history. Ruth and Naomi's story leads to the birth of the Redeemer King, Jesus. And in Jesus, we have refuge and redemption from our ruin. Ruth and Naomi's story points us to God's sovereign loving kindness at Christmas. The amazing news that in his Son becoming incarnate, we can have redemption and refuge in him forever. In his sovereign loving kindness, he's redeemed us rebels through his Son, our Redeemer, Jesus. And that's good news every Christmas.